There were three male cops on me last night. I'm a nonviolent protester. So, you know, obviously the Oakland PD demonstrated their physical power over me last night. And I'm a little jittered, and I'm a little confused about how I'm going to interact with the police now. I'm scared, and anyway, that's my story.
They sent me money to get back home yesterday. I used that money to get a room here because I didn't feel comfortable leaving when it's just half over. So, and that's it. And so, like I said, I have so much love for Occupy Oakland that I'm here on my birthday. So,
I was with my friend Molly last night when they were on top of her, and I tried to shield them, and they hit me in the head with the baton, and I'm still shaken up by the fact that there's a system, and whenever we act human towards each other, they attack us, and that's how the systems work, and I don't have anything else to say, but I love you very much, Oakland crew.
Hi, I'm from Hilo, Hawaii. We have an Occupy of about 12 people strong right now. It's really cool, but we don't have helicopters and we don't have police brutality because we're so small that, you know, people kind of don't take it that seriously. But I'm here to ask you guys to really feel the peace in your hearts. I was there yesterday and I was terrified. I've never seen anything like that in my life, you guys. And I know that the police will be violent. I know they will. I've seen it. It's everywhere. It's happening all over the United States. And I have empathy for you guys. I really do, because I know that in a sense you are trying to do your job and you're trying to feed your families, and our media does not reflect the truth of what is going on, and there are a lot of people in this country who don't understand, and I don't think that they should be blamed for that. I don't think that we should direct a lot of hostility and violence towards people who are ignorant to the facts of what's going on in our country right now. So, I'm a meditation student. I go to Naropa University, and I would just like to ask that we develop a forum on keeping this movement as peaceful as possible.
I want to tell you that for those of you who are struggling with knowing that most of your friends only watch TV news, I want you to remember and continue to do the work with us that OO Media is doing, which is go to Hell Occupy Oakland and find out that people are posting the truth all the time, all day long. Today I posted that we have a lot of solidarity from around the country. People are having rallies today in support of us because of police insanity. So just do the work and tell your friends to do the work. When you post news on your Facebook page that's true, your friends are going to pass it along. So even if they are crazy enough to be watching Fox News, they're going to have a balance and they're going to start to realize how much they've been being lied to. So go to helloccupyoakland.org and get the true news.
A police review forum on February 9th at 6:15 in City Hall. So if you want to occupy City Hall, do it February 9th. Get there early and tell these people what you really think. Also come to City Hall on Tuesday when they're going to vote on laying off thousands of city employees to pay for the OPD cost. That's ridiculous. That money could be going to services, but instead it's going to beat us up. Anyway, occupy, occupy, occupy.
And it's funny because there was this total role reversal that happened in 1917. Because before that, it was the Marxists saying, well, we have no conception of what a true democratic society would be like. We're not even going to try. It's going to be a total rupture. We can't imagine it. The anarchists were saying, no, we have to build the new society in the shell of the old. And then suddenly, you know, Marxists got Russian Revolution, and they were like, what are we going to do? Because the world revolution didn't happen. So they kind of switched roles. They said, okay, we will build a new society in the shell of the world order, except just through a government. And I always wondered how that happened. and why it is that suddenly anarchism sort of faded out for about 80 years, and why it suddenly reappeared again. The moment, 89, 91, where the Soviet Union fell apart. And I think the real answer is war. That, you know, the period between 1914 and 1991, all people were doing was either fighting world wars or preparing for world wars. That was the only game in town. And anarchists, I mean, you know, we're good at a lot of things, but the one thing we're never going to be very good at is, like, building giant tank armies. You know, the moment that it no longer seemed like we were going to have giant world wars anymore in the same way, Marxists kind of disappeared, and the anarchists suddenly are back again. So, center of global revolutionary movements is what we're seeing now. I mean, the first reaction of the people running the show was to try to start another global world war, the war on terror. But it kind of didn't work. They immediately pulled out the biggest weapon at their disposal in, like, 2000 after Seattle, after the big summit mobilizations, which is to start a major war mobilization. And that's I think we're really at a really interesting historical moment because I don't think they can do that anymore. If you look at American history for the last 30, 40 years, every time there's a mass grassroots democratic movement based on principles, direct democracy, direct action, civil disobedience, the same thing happens. The people running the country become completely terrified. It happened during the civil rights movement. It happened during the anti-nuclear movement in the 70s. Happened after the globalization movement in 99-2000. It's always the same thing. They freak out, they panic, they make mass concessions, and then they start a war. So, like, right after the civil rights movement, you have Vietnam. Right after the anti-nuclear movement, you know, they conceded on the nukes, and then they, you know, basically ended detente and started wars in Afghanistan, Nicaragua, El Salvador. Right after globalization movement came the global war on terror. I don't see how they can do that this time. I mean, they're not actually going to declare war on Iran. I don't think they have the resources, the ability to do it. There's nobody else that they could actually have a war with about blowing up the world. So they're kind of stuck. So we kind of got them over a barrel this time. They didn't expect it to happen so fast, and I'm not sure what they can do about it. So I'm actually really optimistic about what's going to happen next.
The thing that I would like to mention, I was reading through all the books that exist right now that are published about the Occupy movement. I think there are three already. And one is published, or maybe even five. And I was reading through these books, and of course there are intelligent things there. But usually there is something that's, and I would like to see what David, to hear what David has to say about it, but there is something that really strikes me as problematic. There, every single contribution goes like this. Then I went there, and there was this people's power, and I had chills coming down my spine, and I got so excited. People are so creative. People are so wonderful. One thing that's missing from all of these accounts is the actual moment of conflict. We are all somehow pushed back into this, I hate to say this, I'm not an American citizen, so you will forgive me, American obsession with getting along. Well, actually, I think it's time to say we do not get along. I'm a member of IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, and our preamble says there are two classes, and these two classes have nothing in common. It's interesting. The war between these two classes will go on until one class, the working class, take over the means of production and abolishes the wage system. There is something that is called class war. It is being waged between the working class and between the ruling class. The problem with liberal bourgeois activism of many of the people who are contributing to this Occupy literature that's emerging is that they're not talking about conflict. What we are interested in is class war. What we should be thinking about is conflict.
Yeah.
We should not be all getting along, because there are some people, says the ghost, the Wobbly preamble, who have all the things in life. And there are other people who don't have anything.
When we were actually first talking about all this back in Tompkins Square Park, and we were planning the Zuccotti Park, we didn't know it was about Zuccotti Park yet, the occupation, we had a lot of arguments about this, and we made a series of really clear decisions, which I think are one of the reasons why this thing took off, And one of the big debates was about police liaisons, certain Trotskyist factions that I won't mention, you know, were very keen on having them, and we decided overwhelmingly no. The one, you know, so when it comes to conflict, I mean, you know, if everybody could get along, we wouldn't be here. I mean, we're doing this because there is no basis to get along with people who are destroying people's lives. Because we made a decision that, essentially, that this was going to be a form of dual power. That we are not going to apply for permission to do anything. That we are not going to negotiate with them about anything.
Fuck and the
that,
law!
And that we're not going to make demands of them to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to them to prove to us why they should even fucking exist.
Yeah.
And people that over and over again. I mean, we're asked to justify ourselves. We have no reason to justify anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
People in this country don't have to justify anything. They have to justify to us why they have any legitimacy whatsoever. And I think what's happening in this country is that people are recognizing this. What we have here is not a system of democracy. We have a system of institutionalized bribery. It's a system of institutionalized bribery where basically they loot our money. And like to some point, at this point, it's like 20% of the average American's income is directly appropriated by the financial services industry. They just take the money, they give it to politicians, and politicians write laws so they can take more. It's not even capitalism anymore. It's some kind of weird system of feudalism. Halfway between feudalism and just sheer extortion. Supposed to go to the guys who are operating this system saying, well, we have some ideas of how you might, you know, sort of reform things a little bit here. No, it's ridiculous. We need to delegitimize the entire system. I mean, you know, if we're going to get anywhere, we have to make this like Argentina in 2001. We got to get it to the point where politicians can't go to a restaurant. They have to wear disguises, you know? People will start throwing food at them. They can't buy cigarettes without people throwing vegetables. I mean, you know, it's already happened in a lot of places. People in this country hate politicians. They know these guys are on the take. They, I don't think we have very far to go. And that's the way we're going to see change, because it forced them to the position where they have to prove to us why they are in any way relevant to our lives.
Many people are critical, and David can tell us more about his response to this criticism, that we are not doing this well enough. That we are not good in terms of strategy. That there is a lot of what Marxists used to call of interclass conflict. A lot of different conceptions. A lot of problems of representation, inclusion. And all of this is true. But we are working it out. We are trying to create something else. Facts of future in the present. And I think if you're going to think about democracy, real democracy, it doesn't exist in the United States, except for in the history books. The only democracy that have ever existed was a democracy that was always continually suppressed.
I always like to annoy people by pointing out to them that nowhere in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence does it say anything about America being a democracy. Those guys hated democracy. They were totally against it. And actually, it's, you know, if you look at why they didn't like it, I just got this great quote from John Adams about that just the other day. He said, well, we can't have a democracy in this country if we had a majority vote. When we got 2 million people with property and 9 million people without, you know what's going to happen if we have a majority vote. The first thing they're going to do, they're going to abolish the debts. Second thing they're going to do, they're going to try to equalize property. That would be a disaster. Well, you know, I think we could use some democracy now. We're in the republic. We're going to make sure there's no democracy, you know, to suppress the dangers of democracy. I think you called it the horrors of democracy, is that they used to call it. But then they discovered as soon as they started running for office that everybody liked the idea of democracy. So they just took the system that was set up to suppress democracy, this Republican system, and just relabeled it and said, no, this is democracy. And that's what we got now. It's happened in the 1830s. Andrew Jackson was the first one who did it. The same thing happened in France. The same thing happened in England. They set up all these elaborate systems to suppress democracy. And then everybody, then they discovered that, like, actually everybody liked the idea. They had to win elections, so they just relabeled the anti-democratic system democracy. I mean, all those right-wing people, when they say, oh, this isn't a democracy, it's a republic, they're actually right. We're addressing exactly the kind of issues that those guys were afraid we were going to address. I mean, I think, like, we have a country of debt peons. We have a country of people who, anybody for most periods of history saw us, they would think, as a population of slaves, people renting themselves out because they're so deep in debt they have no choice. Yep.